Hello and welcome to the APS deep dive session, DBIB 311. My name is Matt Goswell and I work for Microsoft in the Analytics Platform System COE, and I'm supported here by my colleague.
I'm Franz Robella, also working for Microsoft, and I'm in the same team and we share the session today about the deep dive stuff. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thanks very much. So before we kick off on the presentation, did anyone attend Franz's session yesterday, which was the overview session of APS? Quick hands in the air. One. Excellent. Thank you very much for attending yesterday. So today we're going to go into a deep dive. There were more people actually attending this session than actually I can see here, so you guys are quite privileged. You're going to go into the internals of APS today, and hopefully you're going to learn some bits that you can go away and share with your colleagues, with your customers, around how APS is a fantastic data warehouse appliance. So we look traditionally at the modern data warehouse. You've probably seen this slide quite a bit, but this slide is not APS in a box. This slide depicts the modern data warehouse as we all know and love the modern data warehouse story. It's more about a solution, not necessarily around a product. Okay? So APS as a data warehouse appliance is a central part of the modern data warehouse story, but it is not the full modern data warehouse story. The solution that we see on the board here really encompasses various different components and technologies, which when we bolt them all together, we come up with our APS story and our APS solution. Okay? So what is APS? Yesterday, if you'd have seen this, apologies, you're going to see some of these slides again, but we're going to give a quick overview before we move into the deep dive. But it's a pre-built hardware appliance in three form factors of Dell, HP, and Quanta. Quanta is not available here in Europe. It's purely for the APAC region. So here in our region, it's HP and Dell, who we're probably very familiar with. It's an MPP, massively parallel processing technology appliance. Okay? So the differentiators between regular SQL Server and APS is regular SQL Server is a standalone SMP server. One box, one rule, does everything. With APS, we have multiple compute nodes all sharing the execution, which means you've got more horses drawing the same carriage, which means you'll get your results faster and you will get your results across the MPP engine by distributing your data across these multiple compute nodes. That's what provides the performance. On top of that, we introduced DMS, the Data Movement Service, which is an integral part of the APS appliance. Data Movement Service, you can't buy it anywhere, you can't get it off the shelf. It's a technology within the appliance which moves data around, which allows it to be very fast. And we're going to cover off this in more detail in a little while. So what's the power of APS? Well, traditionally, for those that know the history of APS, it was originally Parallel Data Warehouse, which was the original product name. The product has evolved, and we are now an analytics platform system. For the reasons that we are now integrating the regular structured data, our relational data, and we're now mixing that up with our unstructured or semi-structured data, the big data scenarios. However, the big data term kind of points us to a technology, you know, Hadoop. But if we term big data as all data, we're now able to have a very open conversation around use cases and adoption models for the appliance and for modern data warehouse in general. What is Hadoop? We all know and love it, really. It is an open source engine written by Hortonworks, and the versions we're using in HD Insight is 100% Apache Hadoop distribution. But it's composed of HDFS, which is our distributed file system. We've got MapReduce in there, which is our programming model for executions of tasks. And then we have HBase, Pig, Hive, etc., which are the bolt-ons around data input, output, manageability, custom code execution, etc. So it's your full data platform in a box, but it's not relational. So that's the difference between our relational engine, our SQL Server, or our database engine. So if you're Teradata, your Oracle, your IBM, your Microsoft, the relational aspect. Now let's introduce the unstructured or semi-structured aspect. Hadoop itself is a very powerful distributed system. But as this slide shows, it is not the answer to all of our data challenges. The main driver is skill sets. A quick show of hands, who in this room is proficient in Hadoop? Interesting, we have zero hands raised. So this is the use case for APS, where we are able to introduce a data warehouse appliance into a real mixed data environment, but yet we manage this data and we query this data through a very common interface, which we all know and love, which is Transact SQL. Who in this room is familiar with writing transact code? Lots of hands go in the air. So a very positive story here around how APS can be very quickly deployed into an organization or into a customer landscape, and immediately you're able to leverage your existing relational data and introduce your semi and unstructured data all in one box, all in one place, all with one language. That's the power of APS. So now let's move into the architecture of the appliance. Okay, it's hardware. Yes, we've got lots of pieces of tin there, but the tin itself is just providing the foundation. The software element inside the appliance and the architecture is all Hyper-V based. It's a pure virtualized appliance, which means we're leveraging Hyper-V, which means we're levering other services inside the architecture and inside the box, such as VMM, System Center, Virtual Machine Manager. We're leveraging technologies such as WDS, Windows Deployment Services. Okay? We use Windows Deployment Services for provisioning and for recreation of VMs, etc., inside the appliance for recovery. So deployment services is not just around building the appliance, not just about recovery of the appliance, but also around the scalability and scaling out of the appliance. Okay? With the architecture that we're showing on the screen now, and if we look at the four boxes at the top, we're showing HSTs. These are our hosts. These are the physical hosts which are actually running the services. The four boxes that we're showing at the bottom here are our HSA units, our storage units. Hence why you can see the JBODs attached only to the HSA units. The HSA units are sharing the JBOD storage, and for terminology, JBOD, just a bunch of disks. That's what JBOD stands for. There is no RAID modeling inside here, it's all software driven, and we surface the data through clustered shared volumes within the Windows Server Engine through Hyper-V. So we are using Microsoft technologies, we're using our own Microsoft best practices to deliver our own Microsoft data warehouse appliance. It's a true single Microsoft form factor appliance. So the architecture over of the PDW region, we're now going to go into detail of what runs on these physical hosts. And we can see here at the top that we've got our Active Directory, we've got our Windows Deployment Services VM, we've got our Virtual Machine Manager, and we've got a CTL box. CTL, this is our control node. Our control node is our endpoint into our appliance. All our client connections come in via our control node on port 17001. It's a reserve port for PDW and APS. That's our only method of query connectivity into the appliance over that port. But we have loading ports, we have HDI, HD Insight, and we have SSIS and all our other great technologies as well, which we simply connect to APS. And guess what? It just works. That's how it should be. In today's age and today's era of data, what we don't want to be doing is introducing any complicated technology when our data landscape is already complicated enough. So why do we need to learn new technologies, and why do we need to learn new approaches to embrace a technology such as APS when the technology and the use case and the capability are already in the box and the knowledge already rests with you? So there is no learning curve with regards to APS. It's a case of you plug your appliance in, you switch it on, you load your data, you run your business. It's that straightforward. Okay? So the bottom here, we're showing two compute nodes, compute one and compute two. And these sit on the storage nodes. Why? Because they're connected to the storage. The compute nodes hold all user data. No user data is persisted on the HST node or in the control node anywhere. The control node holds only metadata of the physical database instances that reside on the compute nodes. So what does that mean? When we connect to the control node, and you'll see in some demos that we're going to show shortly, the control node provides effectively a single view of all the databases that you would create on your APS appliance and gives you the logical names. The physical names of the databases, which you'll see later on in the demo, don't translate to anything that we see logically. This is what APS does under the covers. All of our database names are given GUIDs at a physical level. But at a logical level, they have a name, database one, or Fred, or MyDB, or whatever you want to call it. Okay? But the control node is that arbitration layer between us, the client connection, going into the appliance, and then the compute nodes in the base of the appliance doing all the computation. So the control architecture I've just described here, we can see that SQL Server on the control node is a regular version of SQL Server. It's just cut down, it's a PDW edition, but it effectively is a regular version of SQL Server 2014. Okay? Our connections come in, and we initiate a connection into our engine service. And every DDL is executed against both the shell and the compute nodes. So we have our logical representation of our data in the control node, and then we pass that transaction straight to the compute nodes, do the task, which we've asked you to do, then aggregate results if required back to control node, send results back to client endpoint. It really is a simple journey with regards to our query. Okay? Authentication and authorization is also performed at the time you connect and execute. We do support schema binding, and of course we've got full metadata catalog in there, which we'll again show later on in this presentation, some demos around how we can use some of this metadata inside the appliance. So a quick overview of the VMs in HDI. So HDI is HD Insight, and this is Microsoft's own version of Hadoop, if you will. Okay? And what we've done is we've packaged our version of Hadoop, HD Insight, into the APS appliance as an option. It's not, you know, a requirement if you purchase APS. You can purchase APS as a relational region, PDW, Parallel Data Warehouse. You can purchase it as PDW plus HDI. What you can't do is purchase it purely as HDI. You must have at least a quarter rack of PDW in there, okay? But this is the power of the appliance, where we can mix relational, semi, or unstructured data together in one place. The disk layouts, as we showed earlier on the JBODs, the disk layouts are completely RAID-free, okay? They are JBOD, all right? And what we're showing here is the disks themselves, sorry, they're not RAID-free, it's HDI that's RAID-free. In this PDW, it's RAID 1, and we have mirrored all the disks in PDW region to support the best practices around SQL Server performance. So things like block sizes, 64K. RAID 1 to support striped disk data access. One drive reads, one drive writes. There's your RAID 1 performance. Okay? In the HDI region, you'll see shortly, we have no RAID. It's just JBOD in there. Okay? There's no fixed size for TempDB. So our JBOD provides us with a massive volume of storage of which we use for our data. And that is user data, that's log, and TempDB. And depending on the processes that you're executing inside your data warehouse, you can use that space in any shape or form that you want to. Really depending on the workload that you're executing against the appliance and your requirements with regards to reporting or analytics or data transfer, data sharing, post-data transformation, you name it, we support it all in the appliance and also outside of the appliance with our other tools such as SSIS, etc. The distribution storage, very quickly, we have 8 distributions per compute node, okay? And these align to physical cores. Okay, this is what gives us, again, a best practice around SQL Server where you align a file group or a disk group to a core. Okay? Real parallel performance. MaxDop, as we term it, inside the appliance, we use a MaxDop setting of 1 across the board. Why? It's an appliance. It does a single query workload, as in we execute the query, it executes across all compute nodes, it runs a query back, and we get the results. Now, when I say a single query workload, I'm not just saying we can only run one query at once. Not at all. Okay, it is a concurrency-friendly appliance. Okay, we can run multiple queries at the same time on this appliance with very little or no impact to the other queries that are running on there because we have a concept of resource or workload management. Okay. Now, the distribution storage in this picture here, just a very quick one, distribution of data inside an appliance, especially inside APS, is paramount. And what we're showing here, if you look at the left-hand side of the graph, we're seeing a massive skew of data to the left-hand side of our data distribution. An example showing here is we're using OWA logs, and therefore the IP addresses, which we're demonstrating in this graph, are going to be naturally skewed to something like a proxy or a web server where we're collecting this information from. So the example that we're showing here actually for IP addresses, if you're going to be using things like OWA and web logs, IP address is probably the wrong thing that you want to be distributing on. Why? Because you're going to see a lot of common IP addresses coming in. So when APS distributes data, it uses those distribution IDs and your data IDs, and it creates your data in those distributions. And so if we've got 8 distributions, and we've only got one set of distributions, this is only an example, values 1 and values 9 would both be on distribution A. Okay? Make sense? So the hardware architecture, very briefly, we've got networking and we've got a PDW region. So the top of the rack, we always have our switches. And our switches contain or consist of Ethernet switches, Mellanox InfiniBand switches. Everyone familiar with InfiniBand technology? Hands up if you are. A few hands have gone up. Excellent. So our InfiniBand technology inside the appliance runs at 56 gigabits per second, and we have two InfiniBand channels. Okay? Not because we need two and it runs at 112. They're there for resilience and for redundancy, but also for multipathing with regards to data transfer. Now let's introduce the HDI region. The HDI region is our Hadoop region. Connects again to the InfiniBand fabric inside the appliance, which is effectively Ethernet. Okay, it's running IPv4, but it's just a fat bandwidth channel. So we take our 10 gig Ethernet channel, for example, we multiply that by 5, we've now got 50 gig. But actually usable, you're probably talking 40, maybe 50% of that channel, right? InfiniBand, we're talking 56 gig. What's usable of that 56 gig? 100% of it. Okay? It's a very fast Ether channel for a very fast data transfer. And so if we wanted to scale up, very easy. We can add another rack to scale up if we needed to go out. And we add more units in. The example that we're showing here is just more HDI units being introduced into the appliance. And we can see here over InfiniBand, IB, and our Ethernet channels that we can connect all of our hosts and storage very economically, very quickly over single channel. We have the concept of active and passive units with regards to our hosts. So when you purchase your appliance, you will always have an active unit and then a failover unit or the passive unit for failover of services. Okay. So HP configuration very quickly, we can see how easily it is to scale up. Your scale units are a quarter rack, okay, for a HP footprint. For Dell, they're a third of a rack, but for HP, in this example, quarter rack. So in a full rack, we can get 4 scale units in one rack. That makes a full rack. Okay. A quarter rack consists of 2 servers, our storage servers plus our JBOD. There is our scale unit. And you have the option of adding more failover nodes at the top as well if you wanted to increase your redundancy. And as we look and we scale up, we can see the sizes increasing. And this example here is using 1 terabyte drives. We support 1, 2, and 3 terabyte drives in the appliance and HDI regions. Okay? And you can see very quickly here how we can scale out over and over, etc., until we come up to the 6-7 rack scenario, the 6.2 petabytes, which is the limit where we get to. Now, the Dell and Quanta configuration, I quickly touched on, a third of a rack. And as you can see here, that's how we scale up on Dell footprint. Okay? Now, interesting, these are the figures that we're able to share with you based on compression in HD Insight. Okay? And what we're showing across the top is the number of compute nodes based on 1 terabyte drives. On the left-hand side, the compression ratio. And the magic number in the middle is our break-even number when we start doing comparisons with other platforms. So this is our HP. Now let's take a look at Dell and Quanta. Does anyone see the difference? So where we're looking at 12 compute nodes with a compression ratio of 7, if I go back to the HP one, we are now showing a compression ratio of 7 on 12 compute nodes. So regardless of the footprint, there is no change in the way that the distribution of data or the architecture of the appliance changes. It's exactly the same. Regardless whether your flavor is Dell or your flavor is HP, for this region, what you get from an appliance perspective is exactly the same bang for your buck. It doesn't matter about the vendor. Okay? And again, scan performance, sorry, very quickly. Let's go back to the scan performance slide. We can see here that scan performance for a compression ratio of 7 across example of 6 compute nodes gives a scan rate of 15.6 milliseconds. Okay? And so quickly, I'm going to show a demo now, the overview of the appliance, and this is why everyone's here. Okay? Let's just unlock this. Let's go to number 7. And so hopefully, what we've seen on the screen now is my SQL Server Data Tools session. And SQL Server Data Tools is our chosen query tool for connecting to APS. We do not support SQL Server Management Studio officially. Okay. SQL Server Data Tools, which is part of our Visual Studio platform, is our only supported query tool right now for APS. However, how many people in this room already use SQL Server Data Tools for things like database projects, etc.? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Okay, so SQL Server Data Tools is not an unfamiliar product. And in fact, SQL Server Data Tools, from Microsoft's perspective, is getting a lot more value being added into it all the time. So SQL Server Data Tools is our data tool factory. And we're going to see data tools really explode in the future with regards to data management. And this is our foundation application for that data management. Okay. And so what I've shown on the screen here is a query that I executed earlier on just to create a table. And you can see the table that I've created right there. It's a CCI table, Clustered Column Store Index, which is a technology we've introduced since 2012, BDW 2012. But interestingly enough, if anyone knows their SQL, Clustered Column Store Index, sorry, Updatable Clustered Column Store Index was not available until the release of SQL Server 2014. However, we had it in PDW 2 years ago. Okay? As part of the SQL Server 2012 PDW edition release, we were already running Updatable Clustered Column Store. PDW was the proving ground, effectively, for CCI. CCI has now made it into our retail RTM version of SQL Server 2014. Thank you to PDW and the data warehousing engine. We had to prove it before we could market it as part of our retail product. So what I'm going to show here now is we can see the count. I'm not going to run that query at the top because it took 39 seconds. But we can see the count that I've run here, and you can see the value that I've got at the bottom. Now what I'm going to show here is how easy it is for us to create data in Hadoop environment from our PDW environment. Now let me give you a quick overview of the architecture that's driving this right now. We have a PDW appliance. We do not have an HDI region built into this appliance. Purposefully, I have built a virtual machine which is running right next to this appliance, which is Hadoop. The purpose of this is to show how easy it is to integrate with an existing big data environment that you may or may not already have in your environment. We are not saying you have to buy HD Insight with regards to APS. Absolutely not. If you want it, that's great. Thanks very much. But if you've already made a decision to go big data with another factory or another vendor, no problem at all. Happy to work with them. So now if I execute this query, you can see very quickly that I have now just created a table called EXT Fact10K Hadoop. If I do a refresh here, there is my external table. An external table is effectively metadata that's been laid out over a semi-structured file that resides in HD Insight or Hadoop, and we are able to take that structure and then lift the data out of that text file based on the structure we've laid over it. Now, interestingly enough, showing a demo like this is very straightforward, but actually when we go and look at the code that drives it underneath. So all I've done is I've just done a view code on that external table, and you can see straight away that I've got my columns defined as it were a regular table. The only difference is the with statement at the bottom, where the data resides and what kind of file format I'm using and reject values in this example here. So for us to work with HDI, all we need to do is tell it where the data source is, where Hadoop lives, what kind of file format we're going to be laying over our data that resides in HD Insight, as in the delimitation, where we could find some structure, and then we select from it. It's that straightforward. Okay? And so here, just showing the DDL driving that table. And so if I wanted to, I will now create a 1 million row table, again, in our Hadoop. But look at the notes I've made through here at the bottom, and I'm going to fire this up and let that run. And now if I go to our control node, which should be there, and hopefully we can see, if it wakes up, we're now starting to pull data over an InfiniBand channel between Hadoop and PDW. Okay? This is real data in flight. I'm going to let it run. Okay? But the purpose of this was to show you that InfiniBand is capable of running at a very high speed. And now the query is finished. Okay. So let's go back and look at the query window. Okay. There we go. And it's just finished there. And now, if I do a refresh of my external tables, there's my 1 million table. And to prove that I can actually do something with this table, I'm just going to quickly select some rows from the top of it. And what we've had to do is the process of executing tasks within Hadoop. That's why we saw the 4 second execution. With any Hadoop task, a distributed task, we execute a map reduce job. APS and PDW with our incumbent technology called Polybase, which you'll see very shortly, and also tomorrow morning at 8:30, there is a session in room F1 next door by my colleague Lionel Penicher, who's sitting down here at the front, which is a Polybase session purely around what Polybase is, how it works, and what value it brings to the appliance. Now, I'm giving you a very high-level overview of it right now. The deep session is with Lionel tomorrow. So please, if you're interested in what Polybase is, the future of Polybase, and the use cases it can bring, please attend that session in the morning. So here, very quickly, I've selected the top 10 rows from an external table that resides on a text file in Hadoop, purely as if it was a relational table executed through Transact SQL Server, a simple SQL statement. I have not had to write a single piece of Java code. I've not had to upload any files or jar files. I've not had to prep my MapReduce jobs or even look at different algorithms or codecs that I would look to leverage inside Hadoop. Why? Polybase does that all for me. A very clever engine. It automatically writes MapReduce based on the task you're executing from Transact SQL. Okay? So that was a very quick demo. And back to here. So now, the appliance domains and regions. What is it that we've got inside the appliance? So we touched on this earlier on. Multiple virtual machines running on Hyper-V. We have physical machines, which are the host, and we have our virtual machines, which is effectively our fabric layer. Now, the PDW region is termed our workload region. Why? That's where our workload executes. Our BigQueries run inside our workload and execute against our data. The fabric side of the appliance is purely the foundation which supports our workload layer. Okay. Virtual machines residing here on HSTO1, for example, ADE, WDS, VMM, control. Our hosts are our service-based machines. And our storage engines, as we can see here, for PDW and for HDI are both connected to JBOD. The only difference is, for PDW, we dedicate one physical host to one compute node, which is a VM, supported by a nice SCSI VM. And with HD, we have multiple data nodes on each physical host. In this example shown here, two data nodes. We also have the concept of secure gateway. Okay, so that allows security into the appliance and into our HDI region. And one thing I want to call out here as well is, as part of the APS model and architecture, we now support and actually promote integrated authentication, not just between our relational engine, but also between HD Insight. So by introducing APS into your existing Active Directory ecosystem in your environment, you can use your existing security model and apply that to APS and now have APS managed as if it was part of your regular AD environment. Okay? Fully integratable. All that's required is effectively a one-way trust between your environment and APS, where your environment is trusted against the APS platform. You would never trust APS against your internal environment, right? It's always the other way around. So we're managing APS. Okay. Quick view on failover functionality. What if we lost a host? So as we showed just there, compute 2 moved from the failed host straight to the spare host. Back up and running, minimal downtime, if any. And one thing I'm going to share with you is actually when we first launched V2, 2 years ago now, I actually involved myself in an experiment in Seattle, and we purposely failed a number of VMs inside the appliance. This is before it even went RTM, whilst executing a query. And the queries continued executing until the VMs were available again, running, and then those queries finished successfully. Inside the appliance, we've got two kind of migration approaches. If anyone's familiar with Hyper-V, quick migrate, live migrate. Live migrate will be used in the background to live migrate your machine from one to another with minimal, if any, downtime at all. In fact, the only thing you might notice is maybe half a second delay as your network is switched from one physical host to another, but you would reconnect instantaneously. Okay. And we're showing here, introduction of a passive unit. The control node, the example being shown on the board here, can fail over to the passive unit, no problem at all. Replace node scenario, if we're replacing a node. Okay, so bare metal provisioning, no problem with that at all. We introduce the node, we can fail over, we can fail back, not a problem. Scaling up, adding in one of our scale units, as I said earlier on. Two nodes plus JBOD, and that's exactly what we've just introduced here. So the first part of the process, add the unit into the rack. The second part of the process is add the physical machines into our domain topology. So this is where we introduce the machines as part of the domain. And the final part of the model is build our compute nodes, come from image through WDS onto those physical hosts, and now guess what? We're pretty much up and running. The only thing left to do is distribute the data across the new scale unit. That's it. Okay? The only part of the distribution The scale unit edition is the distribution of data is offline. That's the only part of this which is offline. And depending on the amount of data you've got, this can be very quick or it could be a day or two. Okay? I'm not going to set the expectation right now that by redistributing your data, you're going to do it in seconds. So I can tell you now, if you're running 3 or 4 petabytes of data in your data warehouse, it would be fantastic if we could move that amount of data in 3 or 4 seconds, right? But this is the real world, okay? We are not running on super, super, super fast SSDs yet, or we're not running on pure neural-driven memory technology, okay? But it's coming. We all know it's coming. But right now, we're constrained by the physical performance boundaries of the hardware. Okay, and this is where APS comes into its own. We have taken the hardware, we have created MRAs, our master reference architectures for the appliance, and we have built on those. So now when you buy the appliance, you are buying a full performant SQL Server MPP data warehouse engine. Okay, very different to a regular SMP SQL Server engine. Now when we're redistributing data, the call out here is that we must have enough free space to support the largest table. Makes sense, okay? We'll do one table at a time, make sure we distribute that data correctly. The largest table, we must be able to distribute that. If we've only got space for the smallest table, then we're never going to redistribute the largest one. So this is where we perform space management, dynamic management, etc. And this is managed not just through our customer base, but also CSS, our customer support services, our Premier team, okay? They are there to help you. And with any APS purchase, we have a full backup support from our Premier and customer support teams, okay? And we say here, replace node, replace VM for VM corruption, add unit, and add region. These are our CSS activities, our customer support service activities. We recommend CSS get involved for these. So quickly going to touch on Polybase. Polybase is our own incumbent technology, which was developed by our technical fellow, David DeWitt. David worked on a long time in coming up with a glue, if you will, that is able to glue our structured and semi-structured and relational data together through a single query interface, Polybase. Okay? The high-level goals here is seamless integration. So it doesn't matter what our requirements are, we can write the code in Transact, we can execute that, and it will run against HDI. We do not want to introduce any extra complexity. Why? Because the skill sets are already in this room at your fingertips. Okay? Why do you want to go on a 2 or 3 week train yourself training course with the, you know, Hortonworks downloadable sandboxes, which are great, don't get me wrong, I've done them. But when we're selling the value of introducing a new data-driven technology inside our environment, the first question customers raise is, what's my upskilling requirement? How long is this going to take? Okay? Guess what? There is no upskilling requirement with APS. Use the skills you've got. You're just plugging in another data realm. That's all you're doing. But you're using Transact SQL to leverage that data realm. So both PDW, Parallel Data Warehouse, and HD Insight, or Hadoop, are distributed systems, but they're distributed in different ways. So PDW, we have a control node, and we have multiple compute nodes. With Hadoop, we have a name node, and we have multiple data nodes. So we still operate the same concept of a distributed system. It's just how we execute in that distributed model, which is slightly different. So here, very quickly, we support parallel data access between PDW compute nodes and Hadoop data nodes, okay? The SQL comes in and the results are stored directly in HDFS if we're storing them in HD Insight. But it's a cost-based decision. And so we use the CBO, the cost-based optimizer within SQL Server, to decide the best plan to use, okay? And all SQL operations on our HDFS distributed file system are pushed into Hadoop, as map-reduced jobs. Again, as I said earlier on, I have not written a single piece of Java code or jar file to support that query that I executed in that demo. SQL comes in. This is number one. Comes into our PDW control node. The query is then executed via a map-reduced job against Hadoop. We then have our HDFS, our Hadoop distributed file system interaction. Read the data, write the data, read the data, write the data. And then the HDFS blocks are moved back to the PDW region, and then the results are sent straight back out to the client endpoint, exactly as I showed in that demo earlier on. The concept of the external table is introducing semi or unstructured data into our relational region. Okay. regular T-SQL syntax, although there's a couple of new commands in there, but when I say a couple, create external table, and then a few other file formats. But I'm not saying you've got pages and realms of learning to do. You know, you've got two, maybe three commands, 10 minutes. And as you saw in that demo, it's very easy to do. Showing you the piece of code now. This is the create external table syntax. The only difference, really, when we look at it at the bottom, is the reject types and, of course, the data sources and file formats. But the rest of the table structure is natively the same as if it was a regular physical table. We have our external table, we have the location, we have the source definition, and we have the file formats. So if we're going to put this in a real world, create an external data source, and in this example I've used some of Franz's here, where we're running on Hadoop, we've got an HDFS location and a drop checker location. And I'm calling out there that the default ports are Cloudera 8021, and for HD Insight, 50300. So depending on which kind of binary version of Hadoop or Big Data you're executing, there's a different port we need to connect to. But that's it. Everything else is the same.
But otherwise, we also have Book Online, which shows also these port numbers, and you can read them up, and then you see what the difference is.
Absolutely.
Just something you need to know about. This is why I have it on the slides here.
That's it. And thank you for bringing that up, because I'm going to show you Books Online in a little while. Before I do, have we got any APS customers in this room today? Then I look forward to seeing you all as APS customers soon, right? That's the purpose of this session. So the external table considerations. Data can be changed and removed at any time. We are not limited, okay? This is a regular Hadoop environment. So as you would interact with a file system, you're interacting with Hadoop. It's all it is. It's a big file system, okay? But file systems come with challenges, okay? Contention, space management, corruption. How do we mitigate this? Well, corruption's easy. We keep multiple copies of the same data everywhere. That's the replication factor, as we all know, inside Hadoop. Depending on your replication factor, you could have two, three, or possibly even four replication factors, meaning your data is stored two, three, or four times in different locations because it's available. That's nothing we've done. That is the underlying concept of the Hadoop engine. Okay? That's why there is no structure to the disks. It's all RAID-free. So integrating data from PDW and HDI. And I showed in that demo just a little while ago. Very quickly, I'm going to run this again. Now, this is a 20-second query. Okay. Now, the purpose of this is whilst I do this, I'm now going to switch to the performance tab. And there we go. We are now starting to see some performance counters be leveraged from the appliance. Now, my guess is that query is potentially finished already. Yep, there we go. So, very quickly, I have reorganized data from inside a structured table, and again, this is a structured table, and I've completely removed partitioning in this example. So I've now flattened my table as CCI. But if you look at the command set that I've used here, I've used the create table command set, I've specified my with statements as a clustered column store index, my distribution, hash, means I'm hashing this value, it's a distributed table across the appliance. If I was to say replicate there, that would mean it's a replicated table. The difference between distributed and replicated tables, hash and replicate, hash tables, majority of fact tables would be distributed. Our dimensions would be our replicated tables. The difference of that being is that our replicated tables exist in full on every compute node, meaning they're available on every node all the time. Our fact tables are distributed across the appliance. And depending on the number of nodes, would mean how much data in total of your fact table resides on each appliance. So if we, in this example I'm going to give, had 10 compute nodes and we were to pass 100,000 rows, for example, to that fact table, everyone can do the math right, we'd have 10,000 rows per compute node. Okay? Now if we've got a replicated table on each of those compute nodes, doing a join between our fact and our dimension is so quick. Because our dimensions exist in full already on each compute node. So all we're doing now is joining our facts directly against our dimensions on each compute node, meaning every compute node has a specific task to deliver on the data that that compute node holds. It hasn't got to go and query all the other nodes. It has a single task to do on its node. Once it's completed, all the other compute nodes will have completed as well. Those results are aggregated and sent back to the control node. We get a single result returned. The control node does that arbitration aggregation for us. Okay. So just a very quick example there. And again, I can select from the top of this table. I'm just going to do a top 100. This is a very quickly. By removing structure, I have not impaired the performance of this query at all against that table. All I've done is I've taken the partitioning modeling out of it. That's it. Why? Because I just felt like I didn't like partitioning today. Tomorrow, I might put partitioning back in. Really depends on my use case, right? So now I'm going to switch back to the PowerPoint presentation. HDFS bridge. This is effectively what's inside Polybase. Okay, this is what translates our language from BDW over to Polybase. And that's done through Polybase into HD Insight. Okay. What we're showing here on the PDW node, we've got SQL Server, PDW edition. Okay, it's doing nothing special. What we've done is we've just got DMS, Data Movement Service, plugged in to PDW. That's what makes it the PDW edition. Okay. And then we can connect there straight to a Hadoop cluster via our HDFS bridge, which is under the covers, what Polybase is. But it's more than that. An HDF bridge, would that write map reduce jobs automatically for us? No, it wouldn't. Okay? So that's where Polybase comes in. Would an HDFS bridge manage transactional consistency? No, it wouldn't. That's where Polybase comes in. So we see the value of how Polybase can arbitrate between those two environments and provide us with full error and transactional management as well. Okay, this isn't just execute and forget the query, and if it fails, oh, don't worry about it. If that query fails, then it means something's gone wrong. Okay, this is a single solution system. Therefore, a transaction must execute regardless of where that transaction is reading its data from. Okay. So data transformation, very quickly. We can query against an external table. Okay, the HDFS bridge reads the data blocks. Blocks are what's stored in the HDFS system. And each row is then converted, effectively bulk insert. And then finally, the row is bulk inserted into the destination table. Very high level, very quick architecture overview of how we can work with data from PDW and HDI. Okay. Set up and monitoring. Okay, this is a really interesting one. Java runtime libraries. We give you those. Absolutely we do. So we give you full support for setup and monitoring of the appliance. Not just the region, the relational region, but also the Hadoop region as well. We have management packs for our own product, System Center Operations Manager, which plug directly into the appliance. You don't need to install anything in the appliance. You install your management pack in SCOM. SCOM then connects to the appliance and gives you full health view and manageability of that appliance, all through a single interface. It's that easy.
However, for that to work, you just need to create a login on the APS site to make sure the monitoring system is allowed to queue that data.
Yeah,
and then you configure that. It's just a little of configuration and you are up and running.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Thank you for that, Franz. Yep. And the SP configure option that we're showing there for Hadoop connectivity is, if you haven't got Hadoop, then you don't turn it on. But if you have got Hadoop and you want to use it, then we'll enable it inside the appliance. And very quickly, through an SP configure store procedure, we can turn Hadoop connectivity on or off. Does that mean local connectivity? No. We can connect to Azure services as well. And this is a really great feature now of APS. With the launch of the next appliance update, AU3, okay, which is already generally announced, but it's going to be released very soon, we now support connectivity from Azure through our data management gateway directly to your appliance on-premise. You don't need to initiate a connectivity or connection outside of your appliance out to Azure. No. Azure, providing you've told it can do it, will come and connect into your appliance, take your data, read that data, take the results, and then produce them in something like Power BI, for example. And then you can share these reports with everybody who you want to share it with. But guess what? The data's on-prem, but your reports are in the cloud. Now, there's true scalability. Because now we're not just moving our business into the cloud, which is great if we could do that, but let's be honest, there's a lot of organizations and a lot of customers right now that cannot move to cloud or unable to move to cloud for whatever reason. Welcome to the hybrid model. where we're taking on-prem and we're taking the cloud model, bringing them both together, there's your hybrid solution. Your data stays on-premise, but your reports can live in the cloud. Okay, now we're talking true scalability. We've got true geographical presence, but yet your data is still owned, managed by yourself. Okay, nice concept, great concept actually. If you think about the obstructions and the restrictions that you're currently working in right now in your environments on-prem when you're talking data. And this is where APS can really come into its own, okay? We don't just work with our own version of HD Insight. We also work with Hortonworks. We also work with Cloudera. And we also work with Azure, okay? So we're very quickly able to share, push, and transform data regardless of where it lives or where you want it to reside.
Just go back one slide, please. Here it's mentioned that we support Cloudera 4.3, but I also know out of practice that it also works with Cloudera 4.5, 5.0. I have not tested anything later than 5.0 on Cloudera. So actually, even usually these are the minimum versions, and you see it's a low part. We also support also 2X versions. Mm-hmm. So that works that way.
Very good point, actually. Thank you for that, Franz. So moving into Column Store, there's a demo coming up shortly about Column Store as well. So is anyone using Cluster Column Store right now in SQL Server 2014? One, two,
three.
Okay, three. Interesting. It would take then a guess that a majority of the people in this room, if you're SQL Server customers, would be running SQL Server 2012. Would that be a fair guess? Hands up if you are, please. So right now, you have been introduced to Cluster Column Store, but non-updatable. Okay? That's effectively what's in 2012. Non-updatable Cluster Column Store. By moving to SQL Server 2014, you're now able to update that Cluster Column Store and take the advantages of which Cluster Column Store brings. Which, one, is performance in memory execution, and the second thing is massive space savings. Up to 10 times, maybe even more, compression on that data when it's in Cluster Column Store. Okay? Now, Cluster Column Store doesn't give you an overhead. No, it doesn't. We load into heap table, or we load into a Cluster Column Store table, no problem, same load speed. If we load into a clustered index table, we see a little bit more of a load time. Why? What's a clustered index? It's a sort-based mechanism. Okay, so we're sorting data effectively as we're loading it. Whereas a Cluster Column Store index, even though it is clustered, it's done on a delta store level where we're taking multiple columns, compressing them in one go into our own stores. Okay, slightly different concept of using leaf nodes of regular clustered indexes down the side of a table where we're taking our leaves out as if it was a bee tree, okay, and aligning pages to it. Cluster Column Store takes the full model, all columns, compress them together, and gives you your delta store, okay, and your row store. So what enhancements are coming beyond SQL Server 2012? Well, as we know now, in SQL 2014, all PDW data types are going to be supported in column store indexes, absolutely. So we still have, inside APS, all those lovely data types which we know and love in SQL Server. So if you've got a solution on SQL Server, you want to pick that up, you want to drop that on PDW, you've got a 95% chance of that working straight away. The 5% covers those data types which right now we are unable to support, specifically around spatial. But don't worry, that's coming in the next release. Okay? In order to drive spatial, we need CLR. Common Language Runtime. CLR, at the moment, even though it's present inside the appliance, is not surfaced. Okay? Our engineering team are working on that right now. So that's coming in the next release. When that comes, we have got full compatibility. Okay? What that means is you take your SQL environment, wherever you're migrating from, you pop it on APS, and now you've got exactly the same solution, but it runs much, much faster than it did on your SQL platform. But don't worry, if you're not migrating from SQL Server, you've got Teragator, you've got Netezza, you've got Oracle, Greenplum, we support migration from all of those platforms as well. We have migration tools available for different platforms. So if you've got a Microsoft representative that you speak to, please talk to them about it. If you want to look at APS, more than happy to work with you on that. This slide is showing you the typical execution from a SQL Server perspective at the top. where we do row-based processing, where we would naturally recurse a number of rows, come up with a query plan, execute the query plan, give us a result. That's row-based processing. With the introduction of cluster column store, we are able to move from row-based processing to batch-based processing, which means we do not incur the overhead of row-based scans. Okay? We now execute in a batch mode. And if we look at the example that's being shown on the slide here, and hopefully, we can see here the cost of our 41. But now let's take a look at the operator cost if we go down on batch-based execution. A real difference. So this is where cluster column store comes into its own and drives that performance in your data warehouse. It's not just hype. This is real. I've got another slide I'm going to show in a little while, which is in the appendix of this deck, which you will all be shared with at the end of this session. But there's an appendix in this deck which calls out a specific customer scenario, and I'll show that in a little while. It's available on Microsoft.com/case studies. It's a financial customer in the UK.
Just on the cost, just to explain a little bit why the difference is so large, just imagine on a row store, to count the rows, you need to bring all the rows into memory and just to count them. Here in the cluster columns, so we inverted the stuff, so you just need to bring all the segments of a single column in order to count it, and therefore we have a much lower I/O rate for this kind of typical queries where we do something like select count star, or where you do not select all the columns at a time. Then you have a huge I/O rate going down and a huge I/O rate savings, and therefore it's much faster. Absolutely. And usually I/O is very expensive in a database world. That's even right. For these tiny databases with just a couple of million rows in a table.
Yeah. And what Franz has said there is exactly right. If you look at the query times, 352 milliseconds versus what?
Milliseconds.
6.7 seconds?
Yeah.
Okay. That's the difference in execution time between batch and row-based processing. Okay. And we can see here in the index design, what does it actually mean to us? And so we can see before a row has been inserted, we have a state on the cluster column store. We insert a row and we can see now that there is a new state being opened, which is this one there.
Oh,
just gone back. There we go. And then after we've done a compression or a rebuild, we can see that the row count has now increased by one from 1756 to 1757. So this example there is just showing one row being introduced into an existing compressed column store group. And now we've recompressed that again.
Something to add here. If you look at the DMVs, they have special names. If you use SQL Server 2014, you will see the very same output of management views. The only column which is missing on SQL 2014 is the PDW node name. And the DMV name does not have PDW in, but the rest of the name is very similar. So whenever you search for that stuff in a similar way for SQL Server 2014 for the cluster column store, you have the very same output. The principles work the same way. The metadata looks almost the same. So it's really the same thing, just one version ahead and without the node ID, because in a regular SQL Server you just have a single node. Therefore, you don't need a node ID. So the rest, what we are saying about cluster column store, also applies for SQL Server 2014.
Absolutely right, absolutely. And so here we can see the different models of row store support, compressed, open, and closed. Compressed is where a row store is now finally compressed and in that state where we've got compression across the whole column store. Open means that it's open for writing and is not compressed in any state at all. Closed means it's not open for writing now, but it's not compressed, and it's in a state ready to be compressed. So open, we're not compressing at all. Closed, we're not writing, we're ready for compression. Compressed is we can read and write to that compressed store. Okay? There's the three main callouts. And the actual number of rows per delta store is just over 1 million. If we look at the bottom of this slide, it's 1,048,576 rows, at which point a group will automatically be closed from an open state into closed, ready for compression. And compression will be applied once we do a rebuild on that table. Okay? Before we do the rebuild, it will always be in an open or a closed state, but never compressed. And so now we're going to explore some of the APS management views inside the appliance. Franz has quite rightly just talked about some of those views. And here I'm just going to introduce some of those now. And so earlier on, we created that CCI FAT24M table, okay? And the query that I'm going to run here will show us that this is our CCI FAT24M table, and what I'm highlighting here is the state description. So we have created a table of which I have no compression returned at the moment, apart from that one little compressed group there, because I've got over a million rows already in that partition. But the other ones are already open. No compression, okay? But I can still interact with this table as if it's a regular table. No problem with that at all. But now I want to space save, all right? I want to introduce our real space savings into this model. So let me go and rebuild this table. I'm not going to do an organizer, there's no need to do that. So I'm going to do a rebuild on this. It's a 24 million row table. How long do you think it's going to take? Hour? 2 hours? No, 6 seconds. So now I've just rebuilt this table, okay? And now let me go and take a look using exactly the same query that I executed before. I see the same table names, but now look at the state of the groups, okay? Interestingly enough as well, I'm now demonstrating how much space I'm consuming by that clustered column store. Beforehand, that column was null. Now, I'm actually able to derive what my space utilization is of my clustered column store, okay? Because it's compressed. Now I'm saving my space, now I'm executing in batch mode, and now I'm able to execute in memory clustered column store because it's compressed, I can fit more into memory in one go. This is a great story for performance. We are no longer bound by I.O. I.O. has been the root cause of, you know, SQL Server performance problems historically for ages. Storage, the root of all evil. You know, if we've got any storage vendors in here, I'm sorry for saying that. But it's true, okay? With the introduction of SSDs now, things have got faster. But actually, when we talk in-memory execution, it's the fastest model possible today, okay? This is where clustered column store comes into it, where we can execute an in-memory process. Sorry, Franz.
But still talking about SSDs, who of you would like to buy SSDs for 6 petabyte of database sizes? Not a very cheap solution, right? So we still have this solution with classical disk in, and it's still that fast.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, that's a great question, actually. Has anyone in this room, or is anyone in this room, managing more than 1 petabyte of data in a data warehouse right now? No one's put their hands up. Quick question, sorry Franz. Yeah. Is anyone managing over 500 terabytes of data in a data warehouse right now? None. Interesting. Okay, I'm gonna drop that one more. Who's managing 100 terabytes of data in a data warehouse?
Okay.
2 hands. So, final question. Less than 50 terabytes in their data warehouse. Who's managing that? Everyone else. Okay. So this is really interesting, right? Where's the rest of your data? If you're running 50 terabytes or less in your data warehouse right now, now it could be a fledgling business, I'm not, you know, judging. However, is this truly the only data your organization has that is worthy of being in a data warehouse? This is the question I'm asking you to ask yourselves. Because the power of APS is not just about the traditional data warehouse. It's the modern data warehouse where we're able to consolidate all of our data in one place, on one appliance, where we now are able to query that data in ways that we were never able to do before, we're able to join that data in ways that we're never able to do before, and we're able to drive insight from that data, which is something brand new to us because we were never able to do it before. But why weren't we able to do it before? Now, the common answer to that question is, I have my data and I'm protecting it. And this is just one view in an organization. And I'm taking a financial view there, so this is my financial data, I'm going to protect that. Now I'm going to become the operations manager, and I've got my own little ODS, and I'm going to protect that as well. and now I'm going to become my marketing officer, and I'm going to protect my data there as well. No one's going to see that because this is really important to me. Okay? And now I'm going to take my regulatory and compliance data, and that's really, really secure. No one else can access that, so I've got to protect that with my own little ODS. Four examples there of data which is now effectively distributed through an organization, but never shared. Okay? The power of insight comes through data consolidation and bringing all that data together and realizing the value of that data. Okay? This is not a new story. This is just common sense. What the APS appliance does is gives you that capability to be able to put all that data in one place and execute your business processes on a single solution. So now your time to value has increased because we're not executing across multiple systems or multiple business units or organizations. We're executing on one appliance with all the data in one place. Okay? There's the power of APS. So some of the other DMVs that I'm going to introduce you to here, and this isn't a long demo, but this is quite in depth. This is a deep dive around the architecture of the appliance, so this is the longest demo that I'm going to be showing. And what I'm showing at the moment is just a simple view where I'm just taking a look at what the topology of this specific appliance is. And as you can see here, I'm just going to scroll my results window up. That the nodes that I have in here, I've got a control node, I've got my compute nodes, I've got a management node, and I've got my physical hosts and storage nodes. Okay? What I'm not showing in there anywhere is an HD Insight region. Okay, this is a BDW version of APS. I have purposefully not included HD Insight because the power of this demonstration, this session today, is showing how APS can integrate with any big data solution. Okay? Providing we support it, Cloudera, Hortonworks, HD Insight, Azure, we will work with that technology. If you have other technologies which, all right, we don't openly support, please open a conversation with us and our engineering teams, because the more traction we can gain and being able to align to those use cases gives us credibility and gives a higher adoption rate for the appliance as well. So here, just a very quick query, seeing the overview of the appliance, looking at the topology. But now, let's take a look at the health. So I execute just this simple query here. Okay. And now I can see very quickly each node, the processes running on that node from an APS perspective around the agents that are running in the appliance. And this is a similar query, just a similar, not the same, and one of the queries that our SCOM management pack would execute against the appliance just to see the health of what's going on. These DMVs are not exhaustive. And I will show you books online very shortly, which Franz mentioned earlier on, which is our Bible around APS. When you buy APS, you get constant updates to books online. Books online is updated weekly by Microsoft. Okay? So we're able to very quickly share those updates with our customers who have purchased APS. Okay? The next query I'm going to execute here is showing the errors. And I'm not going to lie to you, you're going to see a load. But these errors they're actually showing here under the covers are general instrumentation errors. So this could be MIBS, this could be WMI, this could be any non-critical alert condition. And what we mean by that is potentially where WMI may not have given us a status update. Yeah, SIM may be busy. Okay, that's fine, it happens a lot. So in this example here, I'm going to pick the top row. We can see there's a system management exception purely because the error check was not able to succeed successfully because it was unable to read the error condition. All that means is there wasn't an error condition, but it couldn't read it. These are not critical errors at all, and I can prove that to you. In the admin console, which I have here, the admin console is our single pane of glass view to the overall health and performance of the appliance. It's web-driven. And all I do, if you look at the top here, is I just connect to the IP address of the control node, and very quickly I'm able to see a full overview of the appliance. But we're interested in health. So let's go and see our health tab. Now, if there's anything other than green ticks on this health tab, then that's not good. I'm pleased to say that I'm looking at lots of green ticks on this one, so this demo is a success already. This is a one-click view of how healthy this appliance is. This is the same information that our system sensor management pack would also be able to collect from the appliance. But all of this information that is being demonstrated here in the admin console comes from underlying DMVs, distributed management views, inside the appliance. Okay? If we haven't got a DMV, which is very rare because we've got views for everything in this appliance, then we can write our own queries to go and query the system tables. And we have a full suite of system tables and extended properties in there which we can go and query. Okay? And so, what can we do about looking at activity on the appliance? So again, just a very quick example of how we can see what's going on in the appliance right now. Okay, so I've executed this query, and that should finish any second now. And I'm not expecting there to be too much information returned from this query because it's currently going looking at the processes which are running on the appliance. Okay, now for some reason this query is not finishing yet because there's a lot of requests which it's going to navigate through. Okay, probably a bad one to choose. Let me choose the next one down. So, yeah, a lot of activity. There we go. So let's go and take a look at current activity. One process, my process. I'm the only one on this appliance right now. And so very quickly, you can see that for me, for tracking someone's activity, there it is. There is the label for the, there is my database ID that I'm working in. But the power of the views are, I get to see what everyone else has been doing. So that previous query that I executed that did give us results, it gives us all the request steps of every request that's been issued against that appliance. Okay? And we keep history of 10,000 rows. Then it effectively goes and overwrites. So every 10,000 rows, we can take a copy of that log and we maintain full audit. But the power of this approach is everyone is accountable for their actions in a data warehouse. And this is one real security concern that today we do not pay enough attention to. A data warehouse is your single version of the truth. Therefore, why would you let anyone access that data? Or why would you let people share accounts accessing that data when this is your bread and butter? Data is the new currency for an organization, all right? It's not a profit margin, but it's a currency with regards to how you can perform as an organization. The more accurate data you have, then the more accurate perception you've got of your performance. Okay? So this data means money. Would I go down the street and start throwing 10 euro notes at anyone who's walking past me? Okay. If I had a bad day, maybe, but no, I wouldn't do it. Okay? So why would we open up our doors and our data warehouse appliance to let anyone come in and start accessing our data? We should be protecting our data, managing it as the single version of the truth, but sharing the outputs of that data, the insights from that data, from a reporting aspect, where we can drive not just insight from data, but we can drive insight into business. And this is the real conversation changer now. We're not just talking technology. Technology conversation's gone. That happened over a year ago. We are now talking solutions. Solutions are business driven. Business driven means we need to have business conversations with our customers. And those business conversations mean nothing from a technology standpoint. That's why I said earlier on, APS is not the full modern data warehouse. APS is a central part of it. However, the true modern data warehouse story is all of the incumbent technologies which we support and our partners and vendors support, which make up the full landscape solution of a modern data warehouse. Okay? Security is one big important part of that. So if I go and take a look at the history of activity on here, very quickly, I'm going to select 10,000 rows. You can see that from the bottom. Okay, and I can see here, look at the query IDs, the state of what they were, when they are executed, what database they're executed in, and, oh, look at this. I'm just picking on Lionel right now because he's sitting in the front row. Thank you, Lionel, for executing this query early on. We can see that Lionel has created an external data source. Okay, now if I was interested in knowing what Lionel was up to, I would now go and look at his processes, and I'm able to now track full history of what Lionel was doing during his activity on the appliance. Okay, if we're doing everything good, nothing to be afraid of. But what if we're not doing things good? Fraud, okay? Data theft, okay? Is this a real problem in today's environment? Yes, it is, because data means everything. If I'm able to take somebody's credit card information, I'm able to act as that person from a credit card or financial perspective. Okay? If I'm able to take somebody's identity with regards to birth or passport, then potentially I'm able to act in a very inappropriate way as that person. Okay? Data is important. So as an organization, would I want to give the keys to my brand new Rolls-Royce to my 5-year-old son? The answer to that is no. Okay? This is the same example that I'm providing here. We want to protect our environment as much as possible. Accountability is key. The APS appliance is not a quick and dirty solution. It is a fully encompassed solution with true, manageable and auditable security inside it. Okay? We've got other queries, so just pure metadata, and I'm going to jump into AdventureWorks here. I've now very quickly executed a query to show me what tables are in the database, but more importantly, what the geometry of those tables are. Are they distributed, hash, or are they replicated? Replicate. And we can see here in the example that majority of our fact tables, or in fact all of our fact tables, are hashed, and most of our dimensions are also replicated, apart from a couple which have got hash on them because they're large customer dimensions. But other than that, we can see very quickly the geometry state of our tables. Okay? Just one little example. Now, another query that I'm going to show you here, which looks like a bit of a mammoth one, but this is a health snapshot query. And this query was taken from System Center. Okay? This is one of the queries that System Center executes under the covers. Okay? And we can see here the node ID, the group name, as in what group this alert or status belongs to, the component name itself, and the component status. Okay? A single query which is able to give me the full view of health on that appliance in one go. Now, I'm picking on health. I'm an infrastructure guy, you know, historically, so I like knowing things are healthy. I like knowing my infrastructure is working to the best of its ability. And in this appliance case, I like to know that this appliance is as healthy and as performant as it can be. If I'm responsible for it, then I want to make sure it is running tickety-boo. And this appliance is running very, very well. And we can see this from the health status being shown there. But let's take that one further, you know, one stage further. Current appliance alerts. So we touched on appliance alerts a little bit earlier on. But active appliance alerts, none. Okay? So this is just an example of how quickly we can integrate APS into a non-Microsoft landscape from monitoring perspective. All we need to do is execute queries against APS and get the health back from it. So if you're running SolarWinds or you're running a non-Microsoft monitoring tool or something else, great. Just execute queries against the appliance and get the status from it. You can execute these queries as often as you want to. But the whole point of this demonstration here and the metadata that I'm showing you is this appliance can be used in any heterogeneous environment. If you're a Microsoft landscape, great. But let's be honest with ourselves. In any business or ecosystem today, we are working with multiple vendors, multiple products, multiple technologies, multiple challenges, and that's the key, multiple challenges. So that now completes the demo. If you wanted to get started with APS, then it's really easy. Just sign up for an architectural session with someone like myself, or Franz, or Lionel, or any of our colleagues in the APS team worldwide. Learn about APS at microsoft.com/APS, and go and visit us on Big Data as well, microsoft.com/Big Data. SQL Server 2014, for those that aren't playing with 2014, I do recommend you download it and start playing with it, because Cluster Column Store will save you money. It will save you money from performance. It will save you money in storage. Okay? If your challenge right now is cost reduction in your enterprise, Clustered Column Store, whether it be SQL 14 or APS, will assist you in driving down that cost. Okay? A real big takeaway from this session. And so related content, with the B310, which was presented yesterday by France. And tomorrow morning, We have 337, which is Polybase, and that is actually in room F1, next door, tomorrow morning at 8:30, I believe. And that's being run by Lionel and myself. So please, if you're interested in Polybase, come and see us tomorrow morning, and we'll say glad to talk to you to death about Polybase, because we love it. And we're also going to be at Ask the Experts tonight. So if you're going to go to Ask the Experts, please come along and see us. Love to talk to you about the different use cases. Track resources, so we've got hands-on labs, three technical overviews, we've got a training book there as well. But I promised you earlier on that I would share something with you, which is in the appendix of this deck, okay? So I'm going to do my duty-bound bit. Please, can you complete an evaluation form? There is the scan for the evaluation session, which is the end of the deck, and I am now out of time. This is what I wanted to show you. This is a financial customer in the UK. There is a case study on Microsoft.com/case studies. This is real. I executed this proof of concept. We took a 4-hour query. We lifted the data and the query as is. We dropped it on APS. 960 times faster. Thank you very much. My name is Matt Goswell. That's Franz Rabella. Thank you for your time.